Welcome to the One Speed MMA podcast with yours truly, Flying Smitty.
This is Carson Wood.
Carson Wood, as always, my guest.
Diego Sanchez and you.
You mean mugging me? He's mean mugging me. We choose not to record and you mean mug me.
Yeah, that's why I did it.
That's why you did it? So no one could tell?
Mm-hmm.
See, when I wanted to accost you, I just actually said it on the end of the mic.
Punch you in your face. There, I just said it.
Yes, you did. You said it all. You said it all. A lot going on, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of Pokemon this weekend.
Pokemon Go. There's two kids outside my garage when we went to the pool today. I wondered what they were doing outside of my house. I'm pretty sure the cops were probably wondering what they were doing outside of my house. And then we realized my brother, who's a cop, is very familiar with Pokemon Go.
More so than me so far, which is pretty surprising.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I got to get on my game.
You got to get on your Pokemon game.
We got no time to talk about Pokemon. We got to talk about exclusively UFC. We don't even have time for Bellator. We don't have time for World Series of Fighting. We don't have we do have time for, Cage Warriors, because they did provide the ring this weekend.
With the yellow, the yellow octagon?
Yes.
There actually was a Cage Warriors fight this weekend as well.
At the T-Mobile Arena.
But let's start with RDA Eddie Alvarez, because that was one of the main fights. I mean, we can talk Roy Nelson, Derek Lewis, but there's not much to talk about in that fight other than the fact that Derek Lewis won. We did see good judging finally. Even though Roy Nelson had more takedowns, they actually decided to go with Derek Lewis, who was the more active and, you know, had more damage. And then he had an inaudible post-fight interview that was completely, couldn't really tell what he was saying, other than when he was like, is that how I wanted it to go? But other than that, there was not much understanding of what he was saying. Did you see it?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man.
I did watch the fight, but I did not watch the post-fight interview.
Not the interview, just right after, in the ring still. You might have skipped it.
I didn't watch that.
It was pretty funny.
Overall, I thought the whole weekend was pretty good. I know that the main card yesterday got some flack, and I could understand why, but I thought for the most part the weekend was pretty much a success.
The undercards really are what took, other than the RDA fight, the undercards really performed really, really well. The first undercard,
I thought.
Yeah. 200, they were all finishes. I don't believe it was the Ultimate Fighter card. I believe it was the RDA card. There was five fights and five submissions.
I still have to go back and watch the UFC 200 FS1 prelims. I did watch the Fight Pass ones. No, I want to see Sage's fight. I think I've been pretty critical of him. I want to give him a fair go.
I haven't seen that one either. The Sun Tzu fight is the first one that I started to see, and it didn't seem Sun Tzu Dillashaw. It didn't really seem worth watching. But then everything I saw on the Fight Pass prelims, I was really excited about. Jim Miller looked really good. Dong Ho Choi or whatever his name is.
That was the day before though, right?
No. Oh yeah, it was the day before. Joe Luzon looked really good.
That just shows you how tough Diego Sanchez is too. Even though he'd never been finished before and he was out on his feet, He just stood there. Luzon was looking everywhere for the ref to stop it, and it should have been stopped sooner. He looked really angry. I thought he was going to turn around and hit the ref.
Yeah. He was a little irritated that the fight was stopped.
I like Joe Luzon a lot. He takes a lot of risks for a fighter. He's like a poor man's Conor McGregor, I feel like. Maybe not as good of a talker.
He's had some really good wins and some really, sad losses, like his head kick to Anthony Pettis.
But he'll always put himself out there.
I agree with that. He kind of reminds me of Michael Chiesa, but his striking's a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But Michael Chiesa, if he gets on your back, you're done. And I really like that about Joe Luzon as well.
Should we start with, should we go chronological for the most part? I mean, we kind of bounced around already, but I was thinking,
Let's just talk the highlights. What do we remember? What do we want to actually talk about? Because there was a lot, Your girlfriend did lose.
It made me real sad.
Tell us about it.
Well, so she was looking amazing for two rounds, and I was like, there's no way she loses. And then...
Can we get a name? There's a lot
Claudia
of...
Claudia Gadel.
There was only four female fights all weekend, but nonetheless.
Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Throw a chair at a chick.
Claudia looked like she had a pretty big head, though. Do you notice that, how big her head was in that fight?
And I've been looking at it for a couple weeks now. It seemed... about the same as it always has to me.
Mm-hmm. The perfect size.
Did you watch that one?
That fight?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Like, and this isn't, we were talking about it. The impressive thing was, yes, Claudia tired herself out trying to get those takedowns, but she got a lot of those takedowns, and Joanna had to carry her weight.
Mm-hmm.
And Joanna, she didn't have a drop off in pace pretty much at all. She could have went a few more rounds, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. She looked great in her striking third, fourth, fifth rounds.
Do you want a bold prediction? And maybe this isn't bold. Maybe other people are already saying this. But I feel like Tatiana Suarez will be challenging for that title within a year.
She looked good. I actually only saw the beginning of it where it looked pretty even. Mm-hmm. I missed the Darce choke.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone's been talking a lot about how good she looked in that fight.
I feel like she's a better Carla Esparza. And I think without the whole cancer thing, she would have been at least challenging for a title. I'm not sure if she could beat Joanna or not.
Where has she been before this?
She has 3 fights, and I don't know where they were, and then she got cancer. And so then she had to bow out, and the Ultimate Fighter was Dana kind of giving her a shot again, and she just took it. I think she's 29, though, so she...
I about made just a terrible, terrible comment.
I know. I saw that with the look on your face, you little sly dog.
Well, what
you.
I was going to say is maybe John Jones should get cancer.
Oh, no, I didn't.
But I that's not nice to say. And I meant it as in he can take 3 years off and then come back and be better.
So let's talk about the only actual predictions that I made that were going to be good, and then we can move on to all of the other ones that you made that I missed.
For me.
So I did say... Actually, pretty early on that Tatiana was going to win and that Sanchez was going to win as well. Both of them looked really good. And I did think that Claudia was going to win as well, and she ended up losing.
From what I remember you saying, Sanchez is actually a small, what were they, welterweights or light heavyweights?
They were light heavyweights, and he should be a middleweight. So the other guy, Khalil, he was a 300-pound dude, lost 100 pounds, and now he fights at 205. Sanchez, I said, it's not Corey. I'm going to get him mixed up with
his buddy that he had to fight to get into the house, that guy?
Huh?
The buddy that he had to fight, or...
No, Sanchez. I was trying to think Sanchez's first
Alex?
Name.
Alex?
No, I'm going to find it
right now. I'm almost positive it's Alex Sanchez.
It might be. You might be right. But he weighed in at 199. Andrew Sanchez. That's
what it is. Andrew.
He weighed in at 199, and...
oh, geez.
Yeah. He didn't even have to cut weight at all.
So how do you think he does at middleweight?
They got to ease him in.
You think?
But he seems like he fits the bill. He doesn't have very much striking. He's kind of like your Gastelums, your Court McGee's. It's pretty much all wrestling and grinding it out, but I don't remember him... That's what I said at the beginning when I was started to watch it with Paul. I was like, neither of these fighters, I'm picking Suarez and I'm picking Sanchez. Neither of them have been in a bad position this whole time. And I think there was a brief armbar for Suarez. But, yeah, I think that he's not going to challenge for the title, but I think he'll be competitive.
I was going to ask you, did you see that Khalil, his mom was yelling and he had to tell his mom to shut up?
I didn't see it.
Shut up, mom.
It was the best.
Shut up, mom.
Shut up, mom.
And then apparently he got punched in the face right after he said it, too. You got to pay attention to the fight.
You can't talk to mom like that.
You can't.
Andrew won't have it.
Andrew will not have it. Yeah, no, I didn't watch the Andrew fight. There were a lot of people complaining on Twitter. Really, if you want to complain about almost any of the main cards other than the RDA card, a lot of the main cards were a lot of wrestling or not stalling, but fighting to not lose rather than fighting to win. Other than, you know, RDA and Eddie Alvarez, they went out there and just fought. And that was interesting because I rewatched it. I first watched the highlights on Twitter because I was actually in class. And then I rewatched it afterwards on Fight Pass, and RDA was seemingly winning that fight. He was pressing, he was landing more. And Eddie Alvarez just looked like he was waiting and biding his time to land a perfect right, and he did. And, I mean, there's a reason why he's been a champion in every organization that he's fought in. And everyone, when he came over from Bellator, everybody has had a hard time coming over from their first organization. Most people lost their first, other than Robbie Lawler, who hasn't lost since he's come over.
First bully beatdown champion.
Jimi Hendrix. Not Jimi. Johnny Hendrix.
First bully beatdown champion.
First bully beatdown champion. Was he? Lawler was?
No. Eddie Alvarez.
Oh, yeah. He was on bully beatdown. So he he won the title in that organization, too, mm-hmm. beating up bullies. But, yeah, so Lawler lost to Hendrix. I don't think it was his first fight, though. I think he won a couple before he fought Hendrix. And then Luke Rockhold got head kicked and knocked out. DC did really well when he came over from Strikeforce. Eddie Alvarez beat Gilbert Melendez, or he lost to Gilbert Melendez. I can't remember. But that fight where they just stood in front of each other and just punched each other. And so most of the fighters that have come over, Hector Lombard came over from Bellator and he lost his first fight. A lot of them have had a hard time in their first fight and then have proved to actually be really solid fighters. And for a time, we had a ton of Strikeforce champions. We actually went through and talked about all of them. But we've had WEC fighters that are now champions with both Uriah Faber and Dominic Cruz. We have Jose Aldo, who was WEC. We have Luke Rockhold, who is Strikeforce. We have Daniel Cormier, who is Strikeforce. We have Lawler, who is Strikeforce. There was a lot of Strikeforce champions. Verdum, when he was champion, was Strikeforce champion. There was actually a pretty good run where people from outside of the UFC were champions in the UFC, which kind of is a tell that there is a lot of talent outside of the UFC, but a lot of UFC fans don't necessarily believe it or don't believe it until they see it. And then by the time these guys have become champion in the UFC, a lot of people have forgotten that they came in from a different organization.
We'll get a little bit in more into this gentleman, into the show a little bit later, but are you interested in Donald Cerrone going down and fighting Eddie Alvarez?
Freaking Donald Cerrone. He already beat Eddie Alvarez, right? So now he's excited to go back down because he lost to RDA, but he beat Alvarez.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to see it? I haven't heard anybody talking about it yet.
Styles make fights. As of right now, I don't want Cerrone to be a champion in the UFC based on him not being able to control what he says.
He's drunk.
He means it or not. I didn't mean it. I was drunk.
He's not going to say that. He's going to apologize, but he's not going to say he didn't mean it.
Yeah, that's a solid point. No, I don't mean he didn't mean it. I mean he didn't mean it as a derogatory slur towards a homosexual individual. He meant it as a derogatory slur for someone he thought was not performing at their best in that whatever capacity it is. And that's a whole nother discussion. We can continue into that. But Eddie Alvarez, I've always liked Eddie Alvarez. I never thought he was the best fighter. I've never liked RDA. From the first when he first came into the UFC and didn't do well to when he went on a 5-fight win streak over the best of the 155 division, I was never sold on him. And we go back in the podcast, we've discussed this a million times. I would say RDA is a poor man's Jose Aldo. I agree with Conor McGregor, and everyone was like, "You're an idiot." Like, no, he's not. He's much, you know, he's a much stronger wrestler. He's this. He's that. He's beat, you know, all of these people within 155, which right now is a really tough division, and I still was not sold on him.
I feel like what they set up at this point is, regardless of what happened. So you didn't answer the question about Cerrone.
Oh, sorry. What I like to see
you
Cerrone.
You said no because you didn't want to see him champion anytime soon.
Because 155 now, with Pettis looking like he's weaning, with Gilbert Melendez out, and who knows when he's going to be back.
Pettis is 145 now.
But he dropped. But I'm just saying. I'm just thinking 155. Khabib, Ferguson. I think if Cerrone comes back down to 155, you have him fight Tony Ferguson. Maybe given time and different things like that, and then we see out of those two.
This is what I think's gonna happen.
Because Ferguson and Cerrone would be fireworks.
This is what I think. I think they have it set up. No matter what happens between Conor and Nate, Conor drops and fights Jose, and Nate was going to fight the winner of RDA versus Eddie Alvarez, in this case, Eddie Alvarez. And no matter what happens in their fight, even if they set up a trilogy, which Conor already talked about them doing even before we had UFC 200.
That's interesting.
But I think we have, no matter what, you have those two setting up their next title fights. I think that's more than anything what this bout is about, is setting up narratives and trying to build them still up, both of them up more as superstars. And we get two bigger title fights because Eddie Alvarez isn't a draw. And
RDA is not a draw.
And Jose Aldo is not a draw without Conor McGregor anywhere else other than Brazil.
I think Nate Diaz loses the RDA, but I think he beats Eddie Alvarez. I think his striking is just as good as Eddie Alvarez's, mm-hmm. and he's only been finished one time, and that was, I believe, by a head kick. But I think Nate Diaz beats Eddie Alvarez, but he loses again to RDA. I mean, RDA beat him pretty bad. Nate Diaz didn't look good. And so that was one of those fights. Cerrone looked awful against RDA, but basically from the liver kick. Pettis hasn't looked good since he got the title, you know, since he came back from injury. He just he doesn't have a killer instinct anymore. He just doesn't look like he doesn't look like he wants to win, which is sad because I really like Anthony Pettis. But yeah, the 155 division it's crazy. And I mean, getting into this, moving right along, it builds up so many more fights. I am more excited about the UFC now that all of the champions are so weak. As obviously not weak, they're the champions, but they're much weaker than they were during the John Jones time, during the Anderson Silva. Jose Aldo, I guess, has it, but there's not one dominant champ in each division. I mean, you've got Cruz, DJ, DC, and Lawler, could lose his belt at any time. But we saw the Tate lost. Nunes could lose at any time. Alvarez could lose at any time. Bisping could lose at any time. And that to me is very exciting, that all of those fights are people that could win or they could easily lose in any fight.
And I think that's important because I think winning, even for all of these quote-unquote weak champs, again, we're saying that they're not Anderson Silva's mm-hmm. or John Jones defending their belts, really, right?
They're not going to have a 9-fight win streak with the belt.
Yeah, the exciting thing is if they do win. Like, mm-hmm. that's another thing. If you see Bisping rattle off 3, I think he's going to beat Dan Henderson, which I'm kind of sad about because I love that. I don't want him to get that win back. I'd love just the highlight knockout. But if he beats Dan Henderson, that's good for him. He gets that loss back. I think we went the bantamweight division for the women's went from being the most uninteresting, apart from Ronda just carrying it, which I didn't think was interesting. I don't love Ronda. It went to one of the most interesting now. We've got so many matchups that we can make. Holly's fighting
Shevchenko.
If she wins, she has to be right in the mix.
Mm-hmm. Juliana Pena now is right in the mix for beating Kat Zingano, dominating Kat Zingano for 2 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Kat Zingano, you know, what do you do with Kat Zingano now? She got crushed by Ronda Rousey. She loses to Juliana Pena. I mean, her versus Misha Tate again, that was a solid fight. People would, you know, doing number two for them and having whoever wins that get a title shot, even though Pena just crushed her.
I think if Shevchenko wins, you almost throw Shevchenko in. Pena is another one. She does have a legitimate. If Ronda comes back at any time, Ronda gets hers. And if Holly wins, I think she's right back in the mix too. There's a lot of matches.
If Shevchenko wins, I think she's a bigger draw than Pena, but Pena is going to do a lot more talking and a lot more shit talk. But Pena's got a criminal record from fighting some dude in Oregon. She's not the most level-headed person in the entire world.
We don't need level-headed. We need people to fight and talk.
Yeah, and I guess that's true. Shevchenko barely speaks English. She speaks Spanish and Polish or wherever she's from, but she's a great Muay Thai fighter. Shevchenko versus Holly Holm is going to be a great fight based on both of them being strikers. I think Shevchenko has better wrestling,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think she's going to use it. Amanda Nunes actually used her takedown offense to take down Shevchenko and win that fight. And that's why I figured she would be all right if Misha Tate tried to take her down, because she did so well against Shevchenko and everyone's like, yeah, she's a striker, but her wrestling is up to par enough to compete in the women's bantamweight division. And so when Nunes took down Shevchenko and she prevented Sarah McMahon from taking her down, I was like, those are the two things that Misha Tate has. She has a little bit of striking, but a lot of wrestling. And when Nunes nullified that, and I thought that she was going to, Tate had no chance.
Well, my thing,
we shifted into that real quick. So yeah, if you want to reiterate any of that,
well, I just don't believe in Brazilians right now. And that's not to say I don't like them.
We have one straw Brazilian champion and one real Brazilian champion.
But I really do. I'm happy for Amanda Nunes. Misha, she didn't seem right. Like, I haven't heard her call anybody a faceless woman before and that she was just going to roll over her. she addresses people, even Ronda, respectfully, and she has, she disrespects Ronda too at a certain time. Is what I'm saying is, she'll say she broke my arm last time. I want to get that back. I have to beat this woman. But just like, and then Holly Holmes, it was the same respect, and she showed Amanda Nunes respect after. But in talking and leading up to it, I don't know if she was buying into the whole Conor McGregor thing.
She was
trying
to sell the fight,
and it's just
because nobody cared.
But I mean,
she barely made weight. She looked mentally, I mean, being on TV and doing interviews and stuff, she looked great. But when she came to that weigh-in,
I didn't think she looked great during the interviews. That's where, because I didn't really watch the interviews.
I'm talking the original ones when she first won. I haven't seen any of the latest interviews, like the last week or two. I haven't seen any of them. So when she won, she came off as very confident, and she looked good. And she was actually good about Amanda Nunes and being like, she's a worthy opponent, and was like trying to sell her as like, yeah, Nunes should be in here. It's totally fine. But her missing weight showed that a lot of weight cuts come down to your mentality going into them and where your mental state is. A lot of these guys that don't lose that extra quarter pound like Johnny Hendricks are mentally, I don't want to say mentally weak, because I've never done that type of weight cut. I don't want, once again, we are not fighters. We understand. But there is a mental strength that comes into losing an extra pound, losing an extra 2 pounds, and then coming out and really performing. And there's a reason why the betting odds shift when someone misses weight, because there's a higher probability that if you missed weight, you're going to have a harder time physically and a harder time mentally in that fight. And Misha Tate, when she missed weight, I actually tweeted it out. I said, this does not weigh in good for Misha Tate. And so that was another solid point that I was like, okay, Nunes has a really good chance of winning this fight.
That was one of them that I put. So I put, I bet a Brazilian on a whole bunch of fights, and I let her pick some, and I picked some. We just picked the opposite. It was more of just a game, but true to form, every one that I picked or had to take the other one, I lost all of them.
9 out of 12 on the RDA card and 9 out of 12 on UFC 200.
I really need Nate to win. I need him real bad.
Save yourself $10.
Mm-hmm. Or it's more even just
you
for pride.
Just,
I don't
you
care.
You should just better double or nothing now.
Yeah, and now it's already made. I should find another fight, huh?
Yeah.
But no, so going backwards, do you want to go directly to DC, or do you want to talk about DC after when we talk about John Jones?
Let's talk about DC and John Jones at the same time. Do you want to go back to, so let's Claudia, we started with Claudia and then we kind of got away from that.
I just figured we were progressing naturally through to 200. I was just going to move backward through 200 and talk Brock versus Mark Hunt now.
Let's do that.
Your feelings on it.
Brock Lesnar did exactly what he had to do to win that fight.
I was kind of in a weird place about it. I gave him essentially 0% chance to win because he came in on a month's notice. He has been out of the game for 5 years, and I didn't think Mark Hunt could be taken down very easily. But at the same time, it's if there's an X factor that you just can't describe that somebody could upset. If I was to bet on an underdog, and actually I don't even know if he was an underdog. I just assume he was.
Yeah, he was. I don't think he was to begin with. I think he came out as a betting favorite.
If I would have bet on an underdog that weekend, it would have been Brock. Because he can just do something. He's just crazy
as
hell.
He's a freak athlete.
Yeah, and I, at the same time, that's why I didn't bet on it. Because in my mind, I'm like, no, there's no way Mark Hunt loses. Matter of fact, he's going to put him out cold. We're going to see Brock.
Joe Silva's a great matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about this fight, like we discussed, when you think about it as a fight, it was nothing but average. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the original Pride and UFC days. Striker versus wrestler. Wrestler takes down Striker and lays on him for 3 rounds. When you take into account everything that Brock Lesnar has been through, going from the WWE to being the first real crossover star into the UFC to getting sick and all of a sudden, you know, losing all of his luster. I mean, remember when Fedor versus Brock was going to be the biggest fight to ever happen in the history of any fight organization? For him to all of a sudden, you know,
didn't
lose.
Didn't I call that's going to happen, by the way?
A lot of people think it is.
Well, I did it first. They got it from me. They're biting off me. Sorry. Go ahead. I cut you off.
But to go from there to losing to Cain Velasquez and then being like, okay, he just looked bad because he got nullified by another wrestler, which kind of happened. But then to go from that to, oh, he's got diverticulitis. He's getting his organs removed. Then fighting Alistair Overeem in the Clash of the Titans and getting kicked in the stomach, you know, and just going straight down because Alistair Overeem is a beast. And then disappearing back to the WWE after a while. I don't think he went back to the WWE for a little bit, almost like a year. Because there was this weird transitionary period of like, is he going to come back? And so anyway, so he disappears, goes to the WWE, becomes a superstar again after leaving and coming back, which is crazy to me. I mean, I guess if they already like you, they like you. But he's a heel. They could easily not be a likable character, and he is.
Because he's Canadian.
Because he's Canadian. Now he's a great guy.
No.
And then comes back to the UFC on short notice. And all of his interviews have pointed out that he did it for himself. The post-fight interview, the post-fight press conference. I thought he was doing it for money. I thought that Dana White was like, hey, we're going to both go straight to the bank with this. And then hearing him talk, he really did do it to prove to himself that he still could. That he could still get punched in the face, get past it,
He hates getting punched in the face.
But who likes getting punched in the face?
Frankie Edgar. It's different. He's scared of getting punched in the face.
Yeah, he does.
Which he has every right to. He's getting hit by 240, 65 pound. It's the other guy should be just as scared of him. Like, but you can tell, like when he got hit by Carwin. Apart from like the Pat Barry fight. Yeah, if there was ever a fight that should not have ended the way that Carwin should have won that fight, like he seemed like he regretted everything that he had done. But he's crazy enough to do it. But I still think he's kind of scared to get punched in the face.
That dude is a freak athlete, though. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people said to come in WWE shape and last three rounds. Like,
I don't think that I had.
I don't think he's cut down his training. I bet you his training is still pretty on par from when he was in the UFC.
I think I never really, I don't know why, I don't know if it's just because like I've just watched more of the sport and just sports in general since he left, but at his size, what he's doing is crazy.
He's a freak of nature.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he only made the practice squad, right, of the Minnesota Vikings, but I mean, he was an NCAA champion. He, I think, walked on and
two times, right?
I don't know how many times.
Just once, I don't know.
He walked on an NFL team and almost got, you know, on there. He became a WWE superstar, and he was a UFC champion. Like, I don't think that there's many other people. I mean, obviously, DC was an Olympic competitor. Ronda Rousey was an Olympic medalist.
Dan Henderson.
I mean, there are a lot of them, but there aren't as many that have done as crazy of things as Brock Lesnar. He definitely is going to go into the Hall of Fame, even being 5-3 or 6-3 or whatever he is. Mm-hmm. Even being in the WWE, he might be the only person to be in the WWE and the UFC, you know, Hall of Fame. And that to me is just crazy to me.
I think they set up the Fedor fight, and that finally happens. And I think he rides off in the sunset. I don't think we see any more fights after that. And that'll kind of distract that division to kind of flush itself out a little bit more. Because that division, after all the shit that I've talked on it, is in a pretty good place right now, I feel like. Kane looks better than he ever did.
Kane looked great.
Roy Nelson's calling out Mark Hunt. You've got Verdum still always in the mix. You've got the Overeem Miocic fight.
And Kane wants the winner of that. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, he looked back to Brock form. Spinning back hills?
Yeah. By heavyweight.
What?
Yeah.
He's back up to my favorite fighter. Now Frankie still is my favorite fighter. But that was almost as impressive as his win against Rothwell when he beat him stupid.
Or Antonio Silva when he just bloodied him in the middle of the ring.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about the Bigfoot one, and it was just a bloody mess. I still occasionally even pull that fight up and just show Paul
even
images
with
of it.
Junior Dos Santos, the second fight where he just crushed Dos Santos. I mean, he was as dominant as they came in the heavyweight division, and that's the hardest division to be dominant in. I mean, women's bantamweight, I understand, just because there's so many different people and so many different technique and 155 as well. But heavyweight, when everyone's got a puncher's chance, and to be that dominant of a champion,
what's Cain scarier?
Velasquez is the man.
What's scarier, everybody having a puncher's chance or everybody being the master of their craft and you being having yourself a number of different ways that you can be finished in any fight?
It's a solid point.
No, that's a legitimate question.
I think it's scarier to be just caught and be done. I mean, and obviously we know that can happen in any division. I don't know why we've had to defend ourselves so many times during this episode.
What do you mean?
That's the third time we've been like, and we understand, fight fans, that. But I'd rather be the master of my craft and know you're the master of your craft and... Yeah, be worried about getting, you know, punched in the face and getting knocked out. Yes, but I'd much rather worry. I would be more worried if I knew at any time during the fight, if it got within range of a punch, I could just be done. I'd be much more worried about a heavyweight fight than, say, a 155-pound fight.
Physically, I mean, yeah, you don't want to be in the ring with any 165 or 265er. But in my opinion, I think it's harder to be a champion at 155 for longer, because it's like, okay, well, this fight I have to train for a strict wrestler and striker, Eddie Alvarez, or somebody that's really good off his back and an amazing Muay Thai specialist in Donald Cerrone, or an amazing boxer and, again, good everywhere on the ground in Nate Diaz, or just a buzzsaw like RDA. And so, like, literally you have to train so specifically for each one of those fighters, whereas somebody like Cain, you just have to make sure you can take everybody down, and he hasn't all the time, and I do understand that, but I think it's a little bit easier for somebody like Cain to be a sustained champion. I think he's caught some bad luck. I think we see him at champion and defending for a little bit. We'll probably see another fight with him in Verdum at some point, and I like it.
If Verdum wasn't booked already, I think Verdum and Cain would be the next fight, and I think it would happen. I think if any heavyweights fall out, any of them get injured, Cain steps in. I can almost guarantee that the UFC has come to him and said, hey, Cain, stay in shape. If something happens in Cleveland and Stipe Alistair fall out, you're in. Just because... Not because... I mean,
bring that spinning back heel.
Yeah, obviously he deserves it. I mean, he was a champion. He was stripped of his belt. No, he lost to Verdum. I take that back. He lost to Verdum. You know, it happened. And then he continued to get injured and so on and so forth. But
you think they're in talks with Mexico City Stadio Azteca again? They want him there so bad.
Maybe not yet, but they have enough.
Because he dropped out of that one, right? The last time they made it, he dropped out of that, right?
Yeah, because that's where Stipe beat Verdum, was Mexico City. So yeah, no, I could guarantee now that they have Yair Rodriguez, now that they have Cain Velasquez, now that
we've got Yair this time.
There was another. One of Yair's training partners, the one on the undercard, I believe, on Saturday, El Diablito.
They actually did fight in Mexico City.
Yeah. Stipe did? Oh, yeah. Then he lost in Mexico
City. Because I thought so, because I remembered that was his... There's no way he should lose. He's got altitude training. He's Mexican. It's home court advantage.
He looked awful.
Yeah.
He looked awful in that fight. He gassed, and he admitted. He was like, I gassed. And he's never gassed ever, which is crazy to me. No, yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry I cut you off a number of times there.
I'm thinking about all the Mexican fighters that we now have that would be able to help sell that card. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of them now. And they're
Henry Cejudo,
Yair Rodriguez. There was a, once again, just to reiterate, there was a guy that fought, I believe, on Saturday on the undercard that won by rear naked that looked really good. Up kick caught him. He trains with the Yair Rodriguez.
They have Romero. I mean, he's Cuban but
Spanish speakers. You've got Chileans too, if you really wanted to bring up, you know, just South American fighters. And yeah, no, I mean, I think it's awesome. Yoel Romero, speaking of Yoel Romero, he was on Ariel Helwani's show, says he's ready to come back. I think he's up in July, I believe. So he could fight as soon, no, August. So he could fight as soon as next month.
Has he accepted Gay Jesus yet, or are they still at odds?
He said he might not come back to the UFC because Nunes is a champion. And he was really offended that she kissed her girlfriend on
and the shirt that Mark,
television.
And the shirt that Mark Hunt had on.
Was that the Warrior All Fighters?
Yeah.
Do you know that the proceeds to that actually go to the LGBTQASMF?
It's LGBTQAAIP, Justin.
Well, all proceeds from that shirt actually go to those organizations?
I did not know that. Actually, I think I did, because they did. What's his face brought it up in the post fight.
And the only reason they make it, like, part of the reason. So, for those that have not heard, during the. No, we'll get to that in a second. Let's talk fights still, and then we can get to that. We're about 35 minutes in. We'll be all right.
We did essentially talk Kane, so we can talk that Travis Brown. The standout is he just looked like. He looked like Kane of old.
The interesting thing is, what's the guy's, their trainer's name? Tavarian?
I don't know.
Whatever the trainer, Ronda Rousey, well, apparently.
Oh, that guy. I know, yeah. I was thought Tavarian? Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Tavarian.
Something or other.
So someone actually gave a list of fighters that have moved over to that camp and their records since moving over to that camp. Ronda Rousey, well, maybe not Rousey because she's always been there, but Shayna Baszler, Travis Brown. There's about six fighters. And I think that they were like 5-18 since they had moved over to train with him. Like they're like, we don't understand why anyone would go train with this guy. Everyone's gone over there. Travis Brown is, I think, 3-5, mm-hmm. and he had the best record. Some of them were 0-whatever since they'd moved over. And so it's weird. Speaking of the Ariel Helwani show tomorrow, actually, John Jones's manager will be on. So I'm actually interested to see what happens. Moving into that. Maybe we should talk on that on the end.
Yes, well, because we have one other big one on the main card.
We got a lot of.
We missed one big one on the main card.
DC?
Not yet.
Frankie? Yeah. Jose? This is hard for me.
This was hard for me, man, because I thought that I have to go back and watch the fight. I have to find it somewhere because I thought Frankie won pretty easily.
The eye test for me, when I watched it, I knew Frankie was going to lose.
But that doesn't count. The eye test doesn't count.
I was like, this isn't looking good for Frankie. And then you track all the numbers. Other than having 11 takedown stuffed, which is a lot, not only to attempt, but to stuff, that looks really bad. And then significant strikes, I believe, even though Jose Aldo had less strikes, I believe he had more significant strikes. He had more head strikes going into the third round.
I mean, and that's the thing is we don't know really how the grading works per se. Chell says it's you each round you say who won this, like that's essentially the eye test, and you kind of have a rough estimate in your mind of how you grade it as Octagon Control, but I don't think that you should be docked points for a takedown attempt if you're not docked points for a failed submission attempt, and especially if you still have a higher output on the feet, you know.
But look at Nick Diaz, Carlos Condit. That's one of the biggest things. Nick Diaz lost that fight even though he had more Octagon Control and looked more to be pressing more, but Carlos Condit played defense and landed more strikes backwards and ended up winning the fight.
But he did land more strikes, though.
I believe so.
That's my whole
thing. But every Nick Diaz fan was like, Carlos Condit did not win that fight.
Well, I'm a Nick Diaz fan, and I still feel like and I could be wrong. Like, I have to go back and
same
watch that one, too.
Same with the Anderson Silva fight. Nick Diaz continued to move forward. Anderson Silva moved back.
Well, he complains every fight that he loses. I don't know what you guys want me to do. Like, and that's just something that's going to happen.
Same thing as Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar, the last, like, 15 seconds of the fight, like, was like, come on, Jose Aldo. And Jose Aldo was fighting not to lose, and that's what drove me nuts. I hate when fighters fight not to lose.
I don't know that he did. I don't think that he did. He threw his flying knees. He did not want it to go on the ground. No. And he stood up, and he...
But he backed up the entire time.
He's a counter puncher a lot of the time.
And then, was good enough, I think, that and fast enough that he could have finished Frankie Edgar.
I just don't know. You stand in the pocket, you get clipped like Chad Mendez.
And Frankie Edgar kept catching him. Every time Jose Aldo looked like he was getting comfortable, he got caught. And every time he was getting kind of cocky, he got caught.
The thing is like, I thought that Frankie won that fight pretty easily. But then when they said the decision.
Split, at least.
But, you know. You know, like, you can't predict a split, though, because, like, one judge would have to think one way and the two others would have to go the other way. But my thing is
4-1.
Everything, like, I was like, oh, yeah, Frankie's got this. And they said Jose Aldo. And Frankie started clapping. And I turned and I asked Riley, and he said Aldo. And I asked Sean, and he's like, Aldo. And I think I asked you, too, didn't you? And you said Aldo because of the damage. And I was like, I must have watched the wrong fight. I had one guy that validated me on Twitter.
There's a couple.
Pretty much it.
Well, the hard part was, too, is one of the judges gave 4-1 to Aldo, and I don't know how you give 4-1.
No.
3-2. I think you won 3-2. I think he started.
You won the first round easy.
Frankie did.
Yes.
Yeah. I think the third round at the end, when he got the flying knee and then the knockdown, he stole that round, and then I think he won the next two rounds. And I think that's why I would give it to him.
So what now for Frankie?
That's rough because he's beaten everybody but Jose Aldo. He's in that weird Misha Tate territory, DC territory, you know, or Anthony Johnson territory where they've beat everybody but the champion.
I'll tell you what you do. You get whoever the champion is Tavarian's camp. That's what you do.
I think if Conor McGregor wins, you give Frankie Edgar Conor McGregor. No, I don't mean Nate Diaz. I mean, like, he comes down 145, beats Jose Aldo. Mm. Next shot goes to Frankie Edgar.
What do you do with Frankie? Because Frankie doesn't stay out that long.
He fights someone within the top five of the 145.
Ricardo Lamas.
Didn't he already beat Lamas?
Lineker.
Maybe Lineker.
Cub Swanson again?
No. Yeah.
He destroyed Cub.
They'll find somebody for him to fight. I mean, it's not going to be Mendez again.
Anthony Pettis?
Could be Pettis.
I'd be into that.
That would actually be a great welcoming fight for Pettis, I think.
It would be a bad welcoming fight for Pettis.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean.
That's very interesting, though. I like that.
I didn't think about that, but that would be a solid fight. That would be, and that would, I mean, they say Frankie Edgar doesn't sell tickets, but I think that would sell tickets.
I think that's wrong. I think he sells tickets.
They say most people didn't know that Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar had fought before because it was one of the worst performing cards in UFC history.
I'm wrong, then. Yeah. That simple, Justin.
It's that simple. DC versus Silva, what'd you think?
I didn't hate it that much. It was, I mean, I just threw my hands up every time that Silva got taken down, especially the first one. It seemed like he rolled backwards. He didn't need to go down. He's just like kind of.
I think he wanted to see if he could submit him real quick. I think he wanted to see what his actual top defense would be. Because I think Anderson's always testing himself. You know what I mean?
On the feet, I think he actually looked better than he did in the Bisping fight.
I think
he seemed more decisive.
I think DC was more scared of Anderson striking than he was John Jones' striking.
I think if you compare him side by side right now, you're more afraid of John Jones's. But I think DC was more afraid of the outcome.
Yeah, if he got knocked out.
Or if he lost in any way.
And he said that.
Well, yeah, because I mean,
it would have been catastrophic.
And it would have been. Think about, I mean, every detractor that you had that's wrong about talking about how bad DC is or how stupid DC is or what they don't like about DC, which he needs to stop worrying about them. But like all of those people all of a sudden feel like they get validated just because you got beat by an old Anderson Silva, which.
Who did Michael Bisping beat?
Mm-hmm.
They've got a point, but.
Not really. Silva could win at any time against anybody. Even to this day, as a 41-year-old, he's still throwing flying knees.
He still looks good. He just doesn't look like Anderson in his heyday. He looks like he's missed a step. What's next for him? Silva, you think he retires?
No.
It made it look like he was going to.
I don't think so.
He came in 2 days. 2 days.
And he looked decent. Honestly, he couldn't stop a takedown.
You think he tests positive? For anything?
Yeah.
You think? I was going to ask
if he doesn't, then he retires for sure.
Do you think all the post-fight drug tests come back clean?
No, actually, I don't think he tests positive because he's been being, they've tested him almost more than anybody, I think. Who does he fight next?
Silva? Vitor Belfort.
Where?
Brazil.
Okay. Brazilians hate seeing Brazilians fight Brazilians.
But Jose Aldo's going to be there. Nunes is going to be there. Throw Vitor Belfort. But their camps don't like each other, and the Brazilians know Vitor's camp.
It's also white versus black, right? And there is a slight division on that.
There's a race gap, yeah, in most places. Lighter skin versus darker skinned Hispanics or Spaniards.
Yeah, I guess I should say light versus darker. And class is probably a better way of saying it. It's like a class division of sorts from what I understand. And that's part of, like, I think it was you that was telling me that's, maybe it wasn't, but that was kind of the, like, why a lot of people didn't love Maya.
That wasn't me, but it's interesting.
I gotta find out who that was, because they actually, yeah, I guess it wasn't you, because they said they'd actually lived down in Brazil. Anyways, we'll get into that some other time, but I would actually really like to see I think Vitor belt four beats him pretty easily this time around.
He looked really bad against Sousa. Belfort did.
Well, Sousa's looking good, though.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Jacare's looking amazing. But it's interesting, that division, that middleweight division right now is
Sousa was super mad. He's so mad.
That Silva got the fight?
No, that Dan Henderson got the fight versus Bisping. He says that he had his win stolen from him.
Weidman's mad, too. Weidman tweeted out how pissed off he was.
Yeah, I don't care. I really don't.
Are we sure that fight's actually taking place?
204.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's happening.
Anyone that believes the belt still means something just needs to look at that and realize that it does not.
It does. They do. But the
is
thing
it for the belt?
Yeah. The thing is this fight has to happen, you know? It's one of the iconic ones of like all of the UFC, like up there with Forrest Griffin versus Stephen Bonner. That's another stamp that they put on. Like,
Henderson looked so old, though. He looked great. I mean, he beat Hector Lombard,
but he was losing.
Yeah,
desperation
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, that doesn't. I mean, they do mean something, and they don't mean something. I think the names mean more right now, but how do you not want to see that fight? And I understand that it's upsetting the middleweight division, but honestly, I could not care less. Bisping, I want to see the fight.
Bisping should have probably not got the fight to begin with.
Yeah.
So he's only going to be there until he fights another middleweight. So you might as well give him Henderson.
Well, and Henderson can ride off into the sunset one way or another.
Yeah. I don't know. Part of me loves it because it's bittersweet. Part of me loves it because it's that fight. Part of me is not happy because Henderson's not in his prime, so it doesn't matter if Bisping wins. Part of me doesn't like it because if Henderson wins, then what do you do with the belt? You know, does he retire and just there's now a tournament now? Like a four-person middleweight tournament? Like,
that'd be awesome.
You know what I mean? Where you do Yoel already beat Sousa.
I actually had a thought the other day. What if they paid like all the champions to give up their belt, and they did like a 2-year tournament of every division? How awesome that would be.
It wouldn't sell as many tickets as it was of being like, this guy's the champion. He has the belt and he's defending it.
Why?
Because
think of the matchups that you could get.
Because the layman loves a champion. And if there's no champion, why are they watching?
Because again, the names, Conor versus
spectacle
Nate.
Spectacle fights.
Like, think about, you could have people feel more comfortable moving around in divisions and stuff like that. Maybe you could have fighters fighting in two divisions at the same time moving up. You could make a lot more. I mean, it's not going to happen, but I thought it'd be a pretty interesting. They would never do that. First off, they wouldn't be like, hey, do you mind if we take your belt and pay you millions? Neither party's going to agree to that. They don't want to give up millions for no reason.
Well, especially because a lot of those people like DC and RDA don't care about money. They care about the belt.
That's another way to legitimize DC's belt, though, if he runs through the whole division again and then gets his belt back, which I'm not saying it's not legitimate. At this point, if anybody thinks that DC's belt's not legitimate because John Jones isn't there, that's like saying
he beat Anthony Pettit, or he beat Anthony Johnson, and he beat
Gustafson.
The only two people that anyone says would have a chance against John Jones, and he beat them. He is the legitimate light heavyweight champion.
But,
and he is one of the best pound-for-pound fighters to ever enter the octagon.
I would say top three. The only...
John Jones, DJ, DC, Anderson Silva, too.
Oh, no, yeah, he was, but I mean, like, current.
Now,
those are my top three. And if Ronda comes back and she wins the belt, she doesn't break that still. She would still have to run through, I think, the three people that have just had the belt. She would have to beat Holly. She'd have to beat Misha again. And she would have to beat Amanda Nunes at this point. And possibly Shevchenko. And possibly Pena. And then
the bantamweight division's finally exciting again.
Just needed Ronda to leave.
We just needed Ronda to leave.
Middleweight division's exciting. Just needed Anderson to leave. DJ.
Exactly.
Go up to 135, man.
I don't think that 125 would still be exciting without DJ. I don't think there's enough.
I don't think bantamweight was going to be exciting without Ronda.
And you look at male bantamweights, right? What are they called?
Bantamweights.
Bantamweights. I mean, without Cruz, it was exciting. It wasn't exciting because Burrell was there. But as soon as Dillashaw won, it got exciting again because everyone knew that Dillashaw could lose at any time.
Mm-hmm.
10 minutes left. You want to go over John Jones? I wish we were talking about this in a day and a half when, one, we either figured out what he had taken, or two, the rest of the tests came back from UFC 200.
We should have just staked out the – we should have stole the test samples that were out here in Salt Lake. The B sample was here.
It was here.
It was here. The B sample was in Salt Lake. That's what his manager said during – or Nowitzki? I don't know who the hell said it, but somebody said it in an interview.
Dirk Nowitzki?
John, I believe, is what his name is from USADA, but I don't actually know what it is.
Dirk would probably know too.
Dirk, just from tasting it.
Yeah. This is salty. Saltier than normal. It's been through Salt Lake.
That's a John Jones for sure. He's the one that also just gives him the names right then and there.
Yeah, he just tests it and tells him. Actually, I believe that was actually Lyoto Machida. He can actually taste pee, his own.
I thought it was PJ Penn. That's when he was licking, he was checking.
Oh,
he
was checking for for peds.
So, I mean, talk about it. What do you want to say? I'm kind of...
So, just to close up with this, we actually wanted to get my brother on, the lawyer, again, to talk about this and what it might mean. Hit and run was from 2015. Usually probation lasts about a year. It could last 2 years, but most likely he's not on probation. He'd have to see the stipulations to see if the USADA guidelines and contracts with the UFC allowed for criminal proceedings. So, like, say what it was an illegal substance of any kind. He did make it known that if it was steroids of any kind that were illegal, that would still go towards his court case, not just cocaine or any kind of any, you know, THC or whatever else. Dana White made it sound like it was not good. I don't know if Dana White knows what the substance was, but no matter what, it sounds like he might get a 2-year suspension. It's actually two substances. Did you know that?
I did.
I didn't know that. I had to look it up when everyone was talking about wanting to know which two substances he had tested for. And so to me, you actually believe that he didn't know he was taking something that was tainted?
Okay, so a couple things first off. Yeah, we'll definitely see when it comes back like what it was, but I'm not thinking it's anything illegal. I don't think probation is going to bleed into it. We're talking like diuretic and masking agents, which masking agents means he was probably taking other things, right? We don't know, though. Let's wait and see. But this is my take on it. I feel like he didn't know. That's not an excuse to say that he shouldn't get banned or anything like that. I think that he 100% should. And then we get to see if it wrecks his life or makes him stronger. Cause I mean, that's what we're looking at right now. He's not a strong enough minded person to have it not destroy his life and to deal with celebrity and all the pitfalls that come with it.
Johnny Manziel style.
Mm-hmm. But this is like, at this point, I feel like he legitimately didn't know, but that's not an excuse. There was fighters that tweeted out being like, or even Olympic athletes that were like, WADA has an app that you can scan barcodes and it tells you what's in it. So if there's something in there, and on top of that, you submit everything to USADA. You submit to them, and that way if you give them your supplements that this is what I was taking, and they're like, oh yeah, you're good to go. Like, you're good to go. Like, you at least have that backing from what I understand. At this point, if he messed up, if his team messed up, it's on him with everything else that he's gotten a pass for. And everybody was cheering him through this, all the press conferences, booing DC, being so excited for a rehabilitated John Jones. You've gotten every pass in the book. You can burn for all I care right now. Like, I don't want him to necessarily ruin his life. Like, that's not what I'm looking for. But as far as an MMA star goes,
without the fame, I don't see him staying stable. Mm-mm. And most UFC fighters don't. Head trauma with being famous and then all of a sudden not being famous anymore, they have a hard time coping. I mean, most athletes have a hard time coping. That's why a lot of them are broke.
I thought UFC fighters, for the most part, were pretty decent. They usually have college.
I'm talking Pride and UFC days. I'm not talking the last 10 years. I'm talking before most of the people that were in Pride that had all kinds of weird issues.
But all of them are still pretty mellow, even the ones, right? Like Mark Coleman, you've got...
But then you had like Evan Tanner, who disappeared into the middle of the woods and not woods, middle of the desert and died.
What happened?
You never heard the Evan Tanner story? We'll have to discuss it on another podcast.
No, go into it in length right now.
But more or less what ended up happening is Chael Sonnen actually talks about it in one of his Nate Corey interviews. So he was – Evan Tanner was a dominant champion before Rich Franklin. He lost to Rich Franklin, and around that time he started to go cuckoo, like kind of government – and apparently it's right when MySpace started, and so people started to get behind this movement of him doing crazy things. And so he was trying to have some spiritual journey in the desert, and he just left one day, didn't really tell anybody other than, like, I think he posted one short thing on MySpace, left, and just died out in the desert.
So they did find him?
Yeah, I believe they found his body. And it's a super sad story because he was awesome, but also completely different ways of training back then. A lot more drug use, a lot more steroid use, a lot more just crazy things. With that, though, we'll see with John Jones. He may not have known.
John Jones, get your shit
He's
together.
He's got one of the freaking sketchiest managers, one of the best yet sketchiest managers in the freaking business. And he's going to be on Ariel Helwani's show. So if you hear this before then, we would very much recommend it. If you hear this after then, I'd recommend going back and listen to what they say, even though it probably would be all over Twitter. I don't feel bad for John Jones because all of these things he's done to himself. However, I hope that he gets the help that he needs in whatever way due to the fact that he is not the kind of person that's stable enough to not become a true Hollywood story or a TMZ, you know, Lindsay Lohan, Johnny Manziel, like Mike Tyson. That's other than not having any issues with women, he's on a path of Mike Tyson, and it's really, really sad to see. And it's sad to see him. I don't think he's a genuinely good person. I don't.
Chael swears by him. Chael says he's super nice and that him and his mom have had really good interactions and they have a good relationship. But
maybe he's just defensive and guarded when he goes around normal people.
I just think he makes dumb decisions.
No, but I don't mean that. But like when he got in his first car wreck and he said, "Praise God that I'm alive," but I think somebody else almost died. Like, he's been in a lot of car wrecks. He's said a lot of things like, you know, God wants me to be here. Everything's for a purpose. But the fact is he's choosing he's doing these things. A lot of people talk shit on him for having this religious mentality because they're like, well, you're doing things that God, parentheses, doesn't want you to do. But the fact is, if you go through this much trouble, maybe it would be better for Johnny Manziel to believe in some kind of higher power right now to help him get out of alcoholism and spousal abuse and all the other weird accusations he's got and things he's going through.
I just want him to go away.
I want him to get better. I don't want anyone. Like, now that I see Lindsay Lohan, that's like somewhat normal.
Well, I think money hurts Manziel more than anything.
Yeah.
But that's not what it was. John Jones, I think everybody's upset with him for the most part, because we saw him as essentially the guy. He is the first, like,
comeback legitimate.
He's more the legitimate athlete that MMA wants, in the sense that we could really hang our hat as on him being like an Ollie, or because we're not. It's like, again, Chael always says, we're not going to get those really great athletes. If they're really great athletes, they're going to move into football, baseball, basketball, where the money is. John Jones was here and he wasn't making as much as he probably would be, as his brothers probably would be at the time. But he was the one that was going to bring us into that next level. And he is that level of athlete that we can tell our kids stories about. And we want him to be the savior of the sport and bring it into the next generation. And he's just screwed us over every step of the way. And he doesn't owe us anything, to be clear, but we don't owe him anything either.
But isn't that kind of what happens to some of the greatest? I mean, not to put him on the same plane, but kind of just similarities. Ali had to leave during the draft. I mean, that was for a political statement that he knew that what he was doing. Mike Tyson went to jail. What are the other ones that I'm thinking? There was someone else. Michael Jordan disappeared for two years because of gambling debt.
But John Jones has already disappeared.
But I don't.
We already had the disappearance of John Jones.
But it wasn't for most of those guys were gone for what, 2 years?
He's already gone for a year and a half.
So let's see if he can't come back from this and people can say he was gone. There seems to be, for those people that are the greatest of all time in their sport, there seems to be a period of time that they disappeared from the sport, and everyone always talks about what happens if they actually were there?
All those people are mentally stronger than him too, though. And I kind
of Mike Tyson.
Yeah, he's mentally stronger. Yeah, he's crazier. He's crazy. But as far as like being confident in himself,
yeah, okay.
And I mean,
Michael Jordan, I agree. Ali, I agree.
But I mean more in confidence. Like those guys coming out of jail or away from like jump and draft or. The whole allegation of Jordan getting his dad essentially killed, and that's what he bowed out for, but it was actually for baseball. You know, all those things, they come back and they still know they're the greatest and that they compete. I don't know that John really thinks that. He says he does, but have you ever believed it?
No.
I believe it. I think he's the greatest ever.
I don't think he... I think he believes it, but I think he's got major esteem issues.
I think he second-guesses himself all the time, though. He looks most natural when he's actually in the cage. When he's out doing interviews and stuff like that, he looks like he's seeking approval. And you don't really see that. But the thing is, if he was to be born in a society and raise up, fall down, but to still be able to raise back up, it is this one. All you need to do to forego, like to do away with the potential, the dad killing charges, the draft skipping, the wife beating.
Win.
The rape allegations for Kobe, you just gotta win. Americans don't care after that. We will sing your praises.
Or yep.
Which is still wrong, but we will.
And with that, folks, thank you for listening. Please subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you can listen to a podcast. This one may or may not go up on YouTube. Probably will, just as audio. Send your friends. Follow us on Twitter @OneSpeedMMA. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Peace.
Bye.